Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
This episode is powered by Poddex. Poddex are unique interview questions and episode starting prompts in the palm of your hand. So whether you're a new podcaster or existing broadcaster looking to grow your audience and have more meaningful conversations, you're going to want to check out Poddex. Now, if you want to get 10% off your order right now, you can go to poddex.com and type in coupon code. What's the code?
Larry21.
Yes, that's the code. Check out poddex.com. Take your podcast to the next level.
Welcome to the True Crime Never Sleeps podcast. We dive into stories of true crime, from unsolved cold cases to historic kidnapping to gangsters and beyond. We are your source for true crime. We thank you for listening.
Welcome back to our channel, True Crime fans. Today we're diving deep into one of the most chilling and intriguing cases in criminal history. The downfall of Danny Rolling, unmasking the Gainesville Ripper. You've ever wondered who Danny Rolling is, what crimes he committed, or how he earned the infamous title, the Gainesville Ripper? You're in the right place. In this week's episode, we'll answer the most pressing questions you've been dying to know. How was he captured? What led to his downfall? We'll explore the pivotal moments and turning points in the investigation that brought this notorious criminal to justice. We'll uncover the chilling evidence that convicted Danny Rolling, delve into his motives, and reveal his methods. You'll learn about the impact his horrific crimes had on the victims' families and the Gainesville community. We'll even look into Danny Rolling's life before he became the Gainesville Ripper and what happened to him after his capture. Stay tuned as we unravel a shocking and gripping tale of how law enforcement unmasked Danny Rolling, overcame challenges in the investigation, and ultimately ended his reign of terror. If you're curious about the dark secrets behind one of America's most infamous serial killers, you won't want to miss a second of this episode. And before we dive in to today's episode, hit that subscribe button down below, give us a thumbs up if you like our video, and hit the bell notification button to be notified of future serial killer episodes and other true crime stories. To understand the horrific crimes committed by Danny Rolling, it's essential to look into his early life and background, which played a significant role in shaping the monster he would become. Danny Rolling was born on May 26, 1954 in Shreveport, Louisiana. He was the eldest son of James and Claudia Rolling. From the very beginning, Danny's life was marked by instability and abuse. His father, James, was a police officer who was both physically and emotionally abusive. James had a strict, authoritarian approach to parenting and frequently beat Danny and his younger brother, Kevin, for even the smallest infractions. Claudia, on the other hand, tried to protect her children, but was often overwhelmed and unable to shield them from their father's rage. Danny's childhood was a harrowing experience, filled with fear and violence. The constant abuse he suffered at the hands of his father left deep psychological scars. He struggled academically and socially, often feeling isolated and misunderstood. The instability at home led to frequent moves, making it difficult for Danny to form lasting friendships or feel any sense of normalcy. One particular traumatic event occurred when Danny was just 5 years old. His father tied him up and left him in the dark for hours as punishment for a minor misdeed. This kind of brutal discipline was not uncommon in the Rolling household and contributed to Danny's growing sense of anger and resentment. As Danny entered his teenage years, the effect of his traumatic childhood began to manifest in troubling ways. He started to exhibit signs of deviant behavior, including cruelty to animals and petty theft. These early warning signs were often ignored or overlooked by those around him. Danny's relationship with his father grew increasingly strained, and he began to rebel more openly. He dropped out of high school and joined the Air Force, hoping to escape his troubled home life. However, his time in the military was short-lived due to his escalating problems with alcohol and drug abuse. Danny's early life was a turbulent mix of abuse, neglect, and emotional trauma. These formative experiences set the stage for the violent and disturbed individual he would become, ultimately leading to the creation of the Gainesville Ripper. In this next segment, we'll delve into the grisly crimes that would earn Danny Rowling his notorious nickname and forever change the community of Gainesville, Florida. Danny Rowling's gruesome killing spree in Gainesville, Florida left a lasting scar on the community. His carefully planned and executed murders terrorized the city, as his brutality seemed to have no bounds. We're going to explore the timeline of his killing spree, provide detailed descriptions of each murder, discuss how he selected his victims, and examine the methods he used to carry out his heinous crimes. Danny Rowling's killing spree began in the last week of August 1990. Over the span of just a few days, he brutally murdered 5 college students. The murders occurred in rapid succession, escalating the fear and panic among Gainesville's residents and putting immense pressure on law enforcement to catch the killer quickly. So the first murder took place on August 24th, 1990. Danny's first victims were Christina Powell, age 17, and Sonia Larson, age 18, who lived together in an off-campus apartment. Early in the morning, Danny broke into their apartment. He found Sonia asleep in her upstairs bedroom and attacked her first, stabbing her multiple times. He then went downstairs to Christina's room, where he bound, gagged, and raped her before stabbing her to death. He posed their bodies in a grotesque manner, which would become his signature. And the very next day, Danny broke into the apartment of Krista Hoyt, an 18-year-old Santa Fe college student. He waited for her to return home and then ambushed her, covering her mouth and binding her hands. After raping her, he stabbed her in the back, severing her aorta. In a gruesome postmortem act, Danny decapitated Krista and posed her body in a sitting position on the bed, placing her head on a shelf facing her body. And then, on August 27th, Danny's final victims were Tracy Paulus and Manuel Tabota, both 23 years old, who shared an apartment. Early in the morning, Danny broke into their apartment. He attacked Manuel first, catching him by surprise, and stabbing him to death after a fierce struggle. Tracy tried barricading herself in her room after hearing the commotion, but Danny broke through the door. He raped and then killed her, once again posing her body in a disturbing manner. So how did he select his victims? His victims were all young college students, which was a significant factor in how he chose them. He targeted students living in off-campus housing, focusing on those who were alone or appeared vulnerable. Danny would stalk his victims, studying their routines to determine the best time to strike. His selection process was methodical, ensuring he had ample opportunity to execute his attacks without immediate detection.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Danny's methods were both brutal and calculated. He favored using a knife, which he wielded with lethal precision. His attacks were characterized by extreme violence, often involving sexual assault, followed by the mutilation of his victims' bodies. He used duct tape to bind and gag his victims, rendering them helpless before carrying out the murders. One of Danny's most chilling signatures was his post-mortem staging of the bodies. He posed his victims in grotesque positions, adding an element of psychological terror to his crimes. This behavior demonstrated his sadistic pleasure in not only committing murder, but also in creating a lasting image of horror for those who would discover the scenes. Danny's ability to break into homes quietly, his use of binding materials, and his precise lethal use of a knife showcased a high level of premeditation and control. His crimes were not just acts of violence. They were meticulously planned events meant to instill fear and assert his dominance over his victims and the community. And now we're going to dive into the initial investigation and the challenges faced by law enforcement as they raced against time to stop the Gainesville Ripper before he could strike again. As the bodies of Danny Rowling's victims were discovered, Gainesville, Florida was plunged into a state of fear and urgency. The initial investigation into these brutal murders revealed a horrifying pattern and mobilized law enforcement to act swiftly. The nightmare began on August 26, 1990, and police were called to the apartment of Christina Powell and Sonia Larson after friends and family reported them missing. Upon entering the apartment, officers were met with a gruesome scene. Both women had been brutally murdered, and their bodies, like we mentioned, were posed in a manner that shocked even seasoned investigators. The violence and grotesque staging of the crime scene suggested a highly dangerous and sadistic killer. And just days later, on August 27th, officers were called to another grisly scene at Christina Hoyt's apartment. The level of brutality and the signature posing of the body mirrored the first crime scene, leading investigators to suspect that a serial killer was at large. Then, the discovery of the bodies of Tracy Paulus and Manuel Taboda on August 28th confirmed these fears. The similarities in the method of killing, the mutilation, and the post-mortem posing in the victims left no doubt that the same perpetrator was responsible for all these heinous acts. The initial reaction from law enforcement was one of urgency and alarm. The brutality and speed at which these murders were occurring indicated that they were dealing with a highly dangerous individual. Detectives and forensic experts worked around the clock to process the crime scenes, gather evidence, and piece together any clues that might lead to the killer. The community of Gainesville was thrown into a state of panic. Fear spread rapidly as news of the murders broke. Students at the University of Florida and Santa Fe College, along with residents, took extreme measures to protect themselves. Many began sleeping in groups, staying with friends, or leaving town altogether. Hardware stores reported a surge in sales of locks, security systems, and self-defense items. Local media played a significant role in amplifying the fear as new outlets provided continuous coverage of the murders and the ongoing investigation. The palpable fear in the community added pressure on law enforcement to catch the killer quickly. In response to the escalating crisis, law enforcement agencies quickly formed a special task force dedicated to investigating the murders. This task force comprised local police, sheriff's deputies, and agents from the Florida Department of Law Enforcement and the FBI. The primary goal was to pool resources, expertise, and manpower to apprehend the killer before he could strike again. The task force implemented several key strategies: increased patrols, public appeals, profiling the killer, and forensic analysis. The formation of the task force marked a turning point in the investigation. With heightened vigilance and coordinated efforts, law enforcement was determined to bring the Gainesville Ripper to justice. Now we're going to talk about some of the key evidence and breakthroughs for the hunt for the Gainesville Ripper. The hunt for the Gainesville Ripper was one of the most intense and high-stakes investigations in Florida history. The breakthrough that led to the capture of Danny Rowling was a result of meticulous forensic work, valuable witness testimonies, and the emerging power of DNA evidence. From the outset, forensic evidence played a crucial role in the investigation. The crime scenes were meticulously examined, and several pieces of significant evidence were collected. Investigators found fingerprints at the crime scenes, some of which were lifted from the duct tape used to bind the victims. Body fluids were collected from the bodies of the female victims, providing crucial DNA evidence. And tool marks. Distinctive tool marks left on the victim's body and the entry points indicated the type of knife used by the killer. And then they took a look at the posing and staging. The unique manner in which the bodies were posed provided psychological insights into the killer's mind, suggesting a highly organized and sadistic individual. Each piece of forensic evidence added to the profile of the killer and helped investigators build a clearer picture of who they were looking for. As the investigation progressed, tips from the public and witness statements began to pour in. Several key pieces of information emerged. Residents reported seeing suspicious individuals in the vicinity of the crime scenes around the time of the murder. Some descriptions matched the physical profile developed by the task force. A few witnesses recalled interactions with a man exhibiting strange and erratic behavior, raising red flags among investigators. And tips about previous similar crimes in nearby areas led investigators to review unsolved cases, connecting dots that pointed toward Danny Rowling. One critical tip came from a man named Edward Humphrey, who lived near the crime scenes and had a history of erratic behavior and mental health issues. Initially, he became a prime suspect, but further investigation and lack of concrete evidence eventually ruled him out, prompting investigators to look elsewhere. The breakthrough in the case came with the advent of DNA profiling, which was relatively new at the time, but had already begun revolutionizing forensic science. The DNA samples collected from the crime scenes were carefully analyzed and compared against known offenders. A major turning point occurred when the DNA from the Gainesville crime scenes was matched with DNA from an unsolved triple homicide in Shreveport, Louisiana that occurred back in 1989. This link provided a direct connection to Danny Rowling, who was already in custody for unrelated charges of burglary and robbery in Ocala, Florida. With the DNA match in hand, investigators had solid evidence linking Danny Rowling to the Gainesville murders. This breakthrough allowed them to build a robust case against them. The role of DNA evidence was pivotal in solving the case. It not only provided irrefutable proof of Danny Rowling's guilt, but also exonerated other suspects, ensuring that the true perpetrator was brought to justice. The capture of Danny Rowling marked the end of a terrifying chapter for Gainesville, Florida. We're going to dive into the critical evidence leading up to his arrest and how he was identified as a suspect in the operation and tactics used to finally apprehend him. Danny Rowling's arrest was not initially for the murders, but for a series of burglaries and robberies. On September 7, 1990, just a few weeks after the Gainesville murders, Rowling was caught in Ocala, Florida after robbing a Winn-Dixie store. During his arrest, police discovered that Rowling was living in a makeshift campsite in a wooded area near the robbery scene. The campsite would later provide crucial evidence linking him to the Gainesville murders. While in custody, Rowling's behavior and past criminal record drew the attention of investigators. His history of violence, particularly the unsolved... Particularly the unsolved triple homicides in Shreveport, Louisiana, which shared similarities with the Gainesville murders, made him a person of interest. He became a prime suspect primarily due to the forensic evidence linking him to the crimes, which we previously mentioned in the last segment. This was a significant breakthrough as it provided a concrete link between Rowling and the Gainesville Ripper. Further investigation into his background revealed a pattern of criminal behavior that aligned with the profile of the Gainesville Ripper. Rowling's possession of tools and other items consistent with those used in the murders added to the mounting evidence against him. Additionally, witness testimonies placing him near the crime scenes in Gainesville helped to solidify the case against him. The operation and tactics used to apprehend him is now what we are going to dive into. Once Danny Rowling was identified as a suspect, law enforcement moved swiftly to secure a solid case against him. The operation to apprehend him involved several key steps. They began with gathering evidence from the campsite that was located near the Winn-Dixie robbery. And then, of course, like we mentioned, coordinated with multiple agencies, launching that task force, which comprised of local law enforcement, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, and the FBI. And then, while in custody for the burglaries, Rowling was subjected to extensive interrogation. Investigators meticulously documented his responses and compared them with the evidence they had gathered. Additionally, they monitored his behavior and communications, looking for any indications of his involvement in the murders. Although initially tight-lipped, Rowling eventually began to talk about his crimes. The recordings found in his campsite provided damning evidence, but getting a formal confession was critical. Skilled interrogators worked to build a rapport and apply psychological pressure, leading to Rowling making incriminating statements. And now we're going to dive into the trial of Danny Rowling. The trial of Danny Rowling was a critical event in the pursuit of justice for the Gainesville murders. This section covers key moments and highlights from the trial, testimonies from witnesses and experts, the defense and prosecution's arguments, and the jury's deliberation and final verdict. Danny Rowling's trial started in February 1994, nearly 4 years after the brutal murders. The trial drew intense media attention, and the courtroom was filled with journalists, family members of the victims, and members of the public. One of the most dramatic moments of the trial occurred when Danny Rowling unexpectedly changed his plea to guilty. This surprising turn of events came on the first day of the trial, as Rowling admitted to all charges, including 5 counts of murder, 3 counts of sexual battery, and 3 counts of burglary. This plea eliminated the need for a prolonged trial to establish his guilt, shifting the focus to the sentencing phase to determine his punishment. Despite the guilty plea, the prosecution presented a detailed account of the murders, emphasizing the heinous nature of the crimes, to ensure that Rowling received the death penalty. The sentencing phase featured powerful and emotional testimonies from the victims' families, survivors and witnesses, and of course, forensic experts presented detailed evidence that linked Rowling to the crime scene, or to the crimes, including DNA matches, fingerprint analysis, and tool mark comparisons. And then criminal psychologists also offered insight into Rowling's psyche, describing his sadistic tendencies and a lack of remorse. So now we're going to take a look at the defense and prosecution's arguments. Prosecution, rightfully so, argued forcefully for the death penalty, underscoring the premeditated and brutal nature of the murders. They highlighted Rowling's meticulous planning, the extreme violence inflicted on the victims, and the lasting terror he caused in the Gainesville community. The prosecution relied on the overwhelming forensic evidence and Rowling's confession to make a compelling case for the harshest possible sentence. The defense team attempted to present mitigating factors, arguing for a life sentence without parole. They focused on Rowling's abusive childhood and mental health issues, introducing expert testimony suggesting he suffered from multiple personality disorder. The defense claimed that an alternate personality, Gemini, was responsible for the murders. However, this strategy failed to elicit significant sympathy from the jury. The jury's task was to determine whether Danny Rowling should be sentenced to death or life imprisonment. After careful consideration of the evidence and testimonies, the jury's deliberations were thorough but relatively swift. The overwhelming evidence and the brutal nature of the crimes left little doubt about the appropriate sentence. The jury returned with a unanimous decision. Danny Rowling was shit out of luck and was sentenced to death for each of the five murders. The verdict brought a sense of closure and justice to the victims' families and the Gainesville community. And now we're going to talk about the impact on the victims' family and the community. The horrific crimes committed by Danny Rowling left a profound and lasting impact on the victims' families and the community. We're going to dive into the personal stories from the victims' families, the emotional and psychological toll on the community, and the memorials and efforts made to honor the victims. The families of the victims were forever changed by the brutal murders of their loved ones. Each family faced unimaginable grief and loss, struggling to come to terms with their sudden deaths. The Powell family. Christina Powell's family spoke of her vibrant personality and bright future. Her mother, Patricia, often shared memories of Christina's kindness and aspirations, emphasizing the profound loss felt by her absence. The family found some solace in the guilty verdict, but continued to grapple with their grief. The Larson family. Sonia and Larson's parents, Jim and Ada, remembered their daughter as a compassionate and hard-working young woman. They became advocates for victims' rights, working to support other families who had experienced similar tragedies. Their resilience and dedication to honoring Sonia's memory was a testament to their enduring love. And then the Hoyt family. Krista Hoyt's father, Gary, and stepmother, Betty, frequently expressed their devastation over losing Krista. They highlighted her dedication to her studies and her dream of becoming a chemist. The Hoyts established a scholarship in Krista's name to help other students pursue their academic goal. Then we have the Paulus family. Tracy's family described her as a driven and caring individual who had a promising future in law. Her brother Robert often spoke about the void left in their lives and the pain of knowing Tracy's potential was cut short. The family remained active in community efforts to support crime prevention and victim assistance. And then we have the Tabota family. Apologies if I'm butchering their name. Manuel's family remembered him as a loyal friend and dedicated student. His parents, Elsa and Manuel Sr., were vocal about the need for justice and the importance of remembering the victims. They participated in various memorial events and initiatives to keep Manuel's memory alive. The community was deeply shaken by the murders. Fear and anxiety permeated the city, with many residents feeling unsafe in their own homes. The brutality of the crimes and the randomness of the attacks left a lasting sense of vulnerability. Students at the University of Florida and Santa Fe College were particularly affected, as the victims were their peers. Many students took drastic measures to protect themselves, such as installing additional locks, sleeping in groups, and staying with friends or family. The psychological impact extended beyond immediate fear. The community experienced collective trauma. many residents seeking counseling and support to process their emotions. The murders became a dark chapter in Gainesville's history, one that residents struggle to move past. In the wake of the tragedy, numerous efforts were made to honor the victims and ensure their memories lived on. Memorial services were held, scholarship and funds were established in the names of the victims. The University of Florida even dedicated a memorial at the campus's northeast corner, featuring a plaque and a series of trees planted in honor of the victims. This space provided a place for reflection and remembrance, and various community organizations and advocacy groups emerged in response to the murders, focusing on crime prevention, victim support, and mental health resources. These initiatives aimed to create a safer and more supportive environment for all residents. The impact of Danny's crimes will never be forgotten, but the resilience and unity of the community demonstrated their determination to honor the victims and rebuild. The final resolution of Danny Rowling's case brought a sense of closure to the victims and the Gainesville community. We're going to dive into Danny Rowling's execution, the reaction from the families and the public, and the lasting legacy of the Gainesville Ripper case. Danny Rowling was executed on October 25th, 2006 at Florida State Prison in Stark, Florida. His execution was carried out by lethal injection, marking the end of his life and the conclusion of a long and painful chapter for those affected by his crimes. In the hours leading up to his execution, Rowling was allowed to make final statements. He expressed remorse for his actions and apologized to the victims' families. Though many viewed his apologies with skepticism, given his history of manipulation and deceit, he also sang a religious hymn reflecting a claimed spiritual awakening during his years on death row. Witnesses to the execution included family, members of the victims, law enforcement, and members of the media. The execution proceeded without incident, and Rowling was pronounced dead at 6:13 p.m. The execution of Danny Rowling elicited a range of reactions from the victims' families and the public. For many of the victims' families, the execution provided a sense of justice and closure. They expressed relief that the man responsible for their immense suffering had finally faced the ultimate consequence for his actions. The Gainesville Ripper case left an indelible mark on the community and the field of criminal justice. Several key aspects of its legacy include improvements in forensic science, growing victim advocacy and support, community resilience, educational and preventive measures. Its crimes and the subsequent investigation and trial continue to be studied in criminal justice programs, providing valuable lessons in forensic science, criminal profiling, and the psychological understanding of serial killers. In the end, the case serves as a sobering reminder of the capacity for human evil and the enduring impact of violent crime. Yet it also highlights the tireless efforts of law enforcement, the resilience of communities, and the pursuit of justice for the victims and their families. The Gainesville Ripper case had a profound influence on how future investigations were conducted, leading to several key changes, including special task forces to handle high-profile cases became more common after the Gainesville murders. These task forces brought together experts from various fields, ensuring a rapid and coordinated response to serial crimes. And this case also highlighted the importance of public awareness and engagement in solving crimes. And of course, we had the growth of technology integration, such as databases for DNA and fingerprint matching, became more prevalent after the Ripper case. These technological advancements allowed for faster identification of suspects and more accurate linking of cases across different jurisdictions. The Gainesville Ripper case remains one of the most significant and chilling examples of serial murder in American history. It serves as a stark reminder of the potential for human evil and the devastating impact that one individual case can have on a community. However, it also highlights the resilience and strength of those affected, the tireless efforts of law enforcement, and the advancements in forensic science that have since become crucial in solving such cases. This case has left an indelible mark on the field of criminal justice, influencing investigative techniques, highlighting the importance of interagency collaboration, forensic technology, and community involvement. As we reflect on the Gainesville Ripper case, it's important to recognize the role that each of us plays in ensuring the safety and well-being of our communities. Staying informed and aware can make a significant difference. Thank you for joining us on this journey through one of the most harrowing criminal cases in history. By staying informed and engaged, we can honor the memory of the victims and contribute to a safer and more just society. Before we go, we'd like to highlight a very special event that's happening online at twitch.tv. Are you a Dungeons & Dragons fan? Guess what? On July 26th at 7 p.m., there's an incredible Dungeon Dragon themed charity event hosted by the amazing Slayer Case. twitch.tv/SlayerCase. We're all coming together for a noble cause, raising funds for an LGBTQ homeless shelter in Tennessee. Every donation you make will help provide a safe haven and support for those in need. And that's not all. To make things even more exciting, there's a giveaway of thousands of dollars worth of awesome Dungeons & Dragons nerd merch. Yes, you heard that right. So mark your calendars and join us on July 26th at 7 p.m. for a night of epic quests, heroic deeds, and a whole lot of fun. Let's roll some dice, slay some dragons, and make a real difference together. Remember, that's twitch.tv/SlayerCase. See you there, adventurers. Let's make this an adventure to remember. You can check out the event in the link in our description. And with that, I'd like to thank you so much for watching and listening. Of course, if you want to support the channel, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/CCNS. Your support helps the channel grow, upgrade our equipment, and take this show on the road. As always, thank you so much for watching and listening. We'll see you next time.
You have been listening to the True Crime Never Sleeps podcast. Thank you for listening. You can follow us on Facebook at True Crime Never Sleeps podcast and on Twitter at True Crime NS. And follow us on Instagram at True Crime Never Sleeps. Thanks for watching. If you want to support the show, buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNN or become a patron at patreon.com/truecrimeneversleeps.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy and Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.